I'm here with Lin Chun, Marina Lin. Marina is a Taiwanese shamanic practitioner with a diverse background in shamanism, the occult, the arts, and journalism. Marina is fully trained in both Shipibo and Mestizo ayahuasca lineages, and she has a deep understanding of the use of plant medicines and is a pioneer in the use of Formosa huasca, a Taiwanese form of ayahuasca, which uses a native plant, Acacia confusa. So, Marina, welcome.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for being here. So you have a really interesting background and you do really interesting work in Taiwan. And so that was a perspective I thought would be really great to bring in to this conference. And maybe to give people a sense of, you know, who you are and where you've been, you could give us a kind of brief history of what brought you into shamanism and the work you do now.
It's a really long story, but like most people, long story short, I was the first job that I got out of college was a travel journalist. I was working in a travel magazine because I was young. I wanted to travel the world. And then around age of 28, that's when the sector returned. And so that's what happened with me. I started having these because of the nature of my work, I travel the world and I would have these repeating dreams, and I would visit those sacred sites and temples and shrines, and I would feel possessed it. And I would And I remember this once I was in Japan. I was watching a very old folklore, like a shamanic performance. And I went into trance as well. I was having like full body orgasm kind of. And anything I've had a lot of things that I cannot really explain what happened. And first I thought I was of course, like most people, I went to the doctors and then they gave me pills. So that didn't help. So I got depressed and, you know, I can't find anything that really can help me. So I started traveling. I left my job and I started traveling the world. And then I traveled for 13 months when I was 28. And my traveling took me to the Middle East. There is an official psychosis called Jerusalem syndrome. I don't know if you've ever heard of it. That's what happened with me. I traveled and I was in Jerusalem and something happened with me. I felt possessed, or I don't know, it's just like being a traveler. You know, doors opened and brought you from one place to another, one person to another. And then I felt I'd been educated while traveling and having these like, it was something that I cannot integrate by myself. So all these like experiences. And eventually I went into the desert in the Middle East, and I had a really profound experience being alone in the desert. I spent quite a long time in complete solitude in the desert, and I had these, I would call it like a vision quest kind of experience. I felt like I died and died, and I went through this this integration of sense of self and time and everything, and didn't really know what happened. And I felt I was very fortunate. I felt that the desert, you know, Mother Nature is so amazing, and deserts are so powerful, especially the deserts in the Middle East. All the great religions came from there, right? And so I was told, it was like the desert was the container allowing me to go through that shamanic, like a shaman's illness kind of experience, and allowing me to disintegrate and then die and complete die completely and reborn and reintegrate. And coming out of that experience in the desert, I was finally feeling whole again. And so I started a quest trying to figure out what happened with me. And eventually I realized that I might, it seems like I might have been had, like what I had could have been like a shaman's illness. And then a couple of years after that, I encountered acacia, which is a form of Asian ayahuasca analog that I worked with. And like I what I like what I said in at my presentation at Breaking Convention, the very first ceremony, I had such a like intense experience. I was devoured by a serpent, and everything came alive. Everything came alive. The trees, the moon, stars, everything was talking to me. And then a voice told me to, the voice said to me, you think you want to be a healer? No. You've been fucking around doing this and doing that. You have to do this. And you have to go to Peru. And if you went to Peru, your true identity will be revealed to you. So that's my very first experience with acacia. So, and so that's what happened. So 3 months after that, I was in Peru. I was in the jungle. And then that's, dieting, ceremony after ceremony, learning the Icaros, dieting with the plants, completely immersing myself in the plant medicine path. And I remember, you know how like these, well, a lot of people see snakes or serpents in the ceremonies, right? And there's like if you look into the indigenous culture around the world, you see serpents and snakes everywhere. And blah 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 blah. Some people say that argue that it's the snakes actually represents DNA. It's one of the oldest existing like actual substance on this planet. That's the you know that's the that's where life starts. And so anyways, if you have had these plant medicine experiences, you probably will understand. It's like these plants, they initiate your DNA. And there's like a self-learning process. Like you as who you are in your DNA will be revealed to you throughout the process of working with these plant spirits and these consciousness journeys. And I remember in the very first, like a very beginning stage of my apprenticeship with plant spirit medicine, the plants insisted that I need to look into my roots, like I need to find out who are my ancestors. And then so I went back home to Taiwan, and then that's what I did. I started digging and asking questions, and eventually it took me 10 years to find out that I actually have Taiwanese indigenous blood. And my grandmother came from a place near Taipei where it's famous for hot springs. And that place is called Beitou. And I've lived around that area for a very long time, and I have no idea. I had zero clue till this point. And then when I look into the history of it and And that the name of the place Beitou literally means witches. And then so I started digging into, because that the tribe that my ancestors are from, there it's a really lost, it's called the Catalan people, but the blood is still there, I think, but the tribe is lost. The language has been lost. There's really like very little clue. And of course, all these people are indigenous people. They are very much discriminated in society, very marginalized, though most of them will want to hide their identity as well. So that kind of like set off a whole journey of me trying to discover and my roots and remember who I am. And in that process, it's just like a very long process. And it's like, you know, like once you embark on these plant medicine journeys and learnings, you know, things never just happen in the ceremonies and the journeys that you have. Everything penetrates through the ser like it penetrates through your reality and through, and everything, like, you know, clues and plants always bring people to you and opening new doors all the time, and new information, new learnings, and it works simultaneously. It's almost like you're starting to drink outside of your scars, like skulls. You're starting to drink outside of your skulls, and like all these like visions and learnings and that you kind of receive in the ceremony with the plant medicine. They take root within reality, like your day-to-day reality. And so it kind of like I don't know, merge like into all the time. This is simultaneous life process. So and there's okay, it's like it just there's so many stories, because it's like I'm talking about a whole span of like more than 10 years of
Yeah, it's a lot to compress in, but I
yeah.
want to pause for a moment, but it's so fascinating. There's so many different themes I think are worth picking out for viewers, because one of them is your journey. You know, you called it like the shaman sickness. This is a really common thing that in the West, or through Western modes of medicine, would be seen as a kind of psychosis or a kind of split with reality, but in a lot of traditional cultures is seen as gaining access to a deeper reality. You know, and if there's a container for it and an explanation for it, it can be integrated and sort of brought into life, which sounds very much like your process was, or is, because of course these are always unfolding, ongoing processes. The other thing I thought is worth picking up, because we haven't spoken about it in the conference yet, is this idea, this theory, that there is something going on with DNA when we have a psychedelic experience, particularly with ayahuasca. And if people want to check out that theory, there's a book by Jeremy Narby called The Cosmic Serpent.
Tell the serpent, yes.
Yeah, which is an amazing book. And what's fascinating about the DNA as a theory is that, you know, we have, if you unfurled all of your DNA, the double helixes of every single piece of DNA in your body, it would wrap around the solar system twice. That's how much information is in there. And about 10% of that information is used for coding genes, and the rest of it is, we don't know. They used to call it junk DNA, which I find just so funny, because it's like, why would evolution keep all of that, right? So this idea that we're accessing profound information by somehow being able to tap into the information in our DNA, I think is a very interesting theory. And you know, this image of the snake and the wrapping of the snake. If you even look at the symbol for medicine, you know, that we have in the West, it's two serpents wrapping around a staff, you know. So yeah,
Right, right, right.
that's the imagery kind of comes through. So I also wanted to pick up on Formosa, because some people will know this watching, but others might not. Ayahuasca, the plant medicine brew that's used in South America for healing and divination and warfare sometimes, in fact, is a combination of two plants. One is very rich in DMT, Psychotria viridis, and one is rich in harmine, harmaline, Banisteriopsis caapi. So in what's fascinating, and I didn't know this before I met you, is that obviously there's lots of plants that have DMT in them. And Formosa is one of them. Could you talk a little bit about what is the nature of that plant? Where does it grow? You know, how did you come into contact with it?
Okay, the plant that I work with in Taiwan, in Asia, is called Acacia Confucia. And this is a combination of ayahuasca analog that we use the bark of Acacia Confucia, which is probably one of the highest DMT containing plant in the world. I forgot the actual number, but it's really worth looking into. And we use Syrian rue humbling for moi. So, and this combination of Acacia Confucia with Syrian rue is really interesting, because it echoes back to my story with the desert in the Middle East, because actually this combination came from Middle East. It has a Middle Eastern root. It actually has a Hebrew, Egyptian myth, like a root. So that's what I have been working with. Okay, this is also like a maze, like this mystery that I'm trying to figure out. Yes, I'm this okay. This plant, Acacia Confucia, grows. It came from it's indigenous from Taiwan. This plant, and it grows. You can find Acacia Confucia, I think, also in Philippines, and I think some parts of Japan as well. And well, what's funny is that I have looked into this. And I have done my research. There is absolutely no any kind of history that Acacia Confucia has been used as a psychedelic agent in Taiwan, in Asia. Nothing in Chinese medicine, nothing in Taiwanese indigenous tribe. It's one of the highest containing plants in the world, but it's not being utilized by people here. And so it has been kind of like a hidden secret, or like a lost, it sounds like a bit far-fetched, but it's like, we all have heard of the lost tribe of Israelite, the 13th lost tribe of Israel, right? Like, right? Anyways, and so perhaps it's like, well, it, like in Japan, there has been some evidence actually that they think that the 13th lost Israelite tribe actually end up in Japan. And somehow that story, somehow personally, I felt that connects to my personal relationship with Japan and Israel and Middle East. But also I feel like this Acacia Confucia is like a lost tribe of some very deep history, very deep mystery that has been, something has passed on through the Silk Road And there's something that's and it's still alive. And somehow something pushed me or called me to travel to these places. And so that's so I so yes, of course. And then I have been doing a lot of research about Acacia, and I have a very deep personal experience, like a relationship with Israel and the Middle East. And there is a, I mentioned about this, there's a professor in Hebrew Jerusalem University called his name is Benny Shannon. And he wrote a theory about he thinks that the vision that Moses is seeing, like seeing the burning bushes that the God is talking to him, that vision came from a DMT experience, which is probably an Acacia experience. And I have looked into this, and I have friends in Israel, and I have friends who work with Acacias in Israel, and that they report back to me that is not effective. Somehow it's not it doesn't work. So but then I met someone in Breaking Convention. I actually, and her name is Acacia, you know, like magically, and she told me like, so you need to, she studied all these botanical stuff, right? She's like the professional. And she told me that because that's because you need to stress these plants in order for them to produce DMT. And she gave this whole like like you know, this whole story about the tree of life in Egypt is Acacia, and how the pharaohs is sucking on the nipples of the, you know, the milk of the acacia tree, and all these things, all these like magical stories. And I was, that's the first time I heard about these things about Acacia through a woman called Acacia that I met in, you know, Breaking Convention. That's like one of the examples of how, you know, plants are also like so amazingly smart in orchestrating these meetings and like sending people to you at the right time. And as a traveler, I always think that, you know, like by showing up at the right place at the right time to meet the right person to take you to the right place, that itself is an act of power, you know, like all these information comes through you, you know. And so and so I so yes, I have also talked to some of my friends, my Jewish friends, about the Jewish mysticism about these things. And very vaguely, I think they have like two, like, I don't know, but like the Jewish society, they have two kinds of people. One is the Kohens, like the priests, and one are these loving people, which is like just like the abnormal people. This so or like I don't I, very vaguely, I heard this story from someone. So traditionally, the Jewish people, they do work with psychedelics, but it's not in the form of drinks. It's like in the form of some kind of burning incense. And one family, the Cohen family, owns the knowledge of how to conduct the rituals. The prayers, the songs, the process of the ritual, and the Levine, there's another family who holds the secret of the formula of the actual sacrament, or I don't know, incense, whatever. So this, you know, so this mystery will not be
Taken by someone else or
yeah,
like
right. This is kind of like this is a vague story that I've heard. So I'm talking about this because I would really like to hear if anyone listening to this, if you know anything, any more stories or information about anything that I've just said, please let me know. I'm really researching about all of these things. So for me, Acacia, working with Acacia Confucia, working with this combination of ayahuasca analog called Formosa Huasca. Formosa is actually another name for Taiwan. The Portuguese call Taiwan Formosa, beautiful island. So this combination is called Formosa Huasca because of that. And the actual plant is Acacia Confucia and Syrian rue. Acacia Confucia came from Taiwan, but Syrian rue came from the Middle East. So it has this, mysterious link.
Love that.
And
Yeah, I love the combination of those two things of this kind of cross-cultural exchange, you know, like that feels very important because that is actually very common as well through shamanic traditions. There's a writer called Peter Kingsley who writes about the like Pythagoras and Empedocles and Parmenides, who were the pre-Socratic philosophers, and he thinks that there was a link between Mongolian shamanism and particularly this tradition of holding an arrow and going into a trance state that then connected with Pythagorean Greece and all these practices and ways of seeing kind of connected, which is a nice segue into something I wanted to ask you to maybe as our last question, which is I know you're about to go to Mongolia or soon you'll be traveling to Mongolia for a kind of gathering of different shamans. Is that right? I mean, I'd love to hear more about it because I'm really curious about this, especially in Asia, which I don't know that much about, is this cultural exchange of shamanic traditions.
Well, it's I don't feel there's a lot of like cultural exchanges between the shamans in Asia, but it's just me because I go out and I actively seek out for these shamans. And I was in Mongolia in 2018, and I do know some shamans there, have my connections. And this year there's a World Shaman Festival in Mongolia, so I put together a tour bringing people, mostly Asian people, to Mongolia for the festival as well. But after that gathering, we will head north and to the reindeer herders, the Zaton people, the original Annamitta Mascara, Eurasian culture. So, and I have located their shamans, and so I'm really looking forward to meeting them. And so this is also part of what I do, other than teaching, researching, and of course my main practice is with plant medicine, of course, but I am also trained in non-plant assisted shamanism because I think that's also very necessary. So, and that's why I went to Mongolia. I'm bringing a group of people with me this time, and I'm
Exciting.
planning to do this every year as well. So this year I'm bringing a group to Mongolia, and also I'm bringing two groups to Peru, and to drink ayahuasca and to learn with my teachers. And I have been thinking about because I paused serving acacia for a very long time because I don't want to be burdened with all the all the legal stuff. And But I don't know. I am thinking of, I'm feeling it like I'm thinking of some possibilities or like somewhere I can set up a practice. Maybe in Portugal, I've been thinking about like because that's the only place that I can practice these things without having to deal with law and stuff. Yeah, so that's kind of where I'm at.
Yeah, and that's something. I mean, that's such an important reminder that this is, these are deep spiritual traditions for many people around the world, and they're still illegal, which is, obviously a travesty
Well,
in my mind.
well, just let people know that, in Asia, you wouldn't believe it's even illegal to talk about any psychedelic in Korea. If you talk about marijuana, the police can come after you, even just talking about it. And so it's a very different situation in Asia.
Yeah,
So
that's really doesn't surprise me in some ways, but it's kind of shocking as well, right?
it's very important. I think education is very important. Like people, we need to like, educate people about these traditions and psychedelics. So in order to, well, it's just like you cannot believe.
Yeah, but I'm glad that there's people like you out there in Asia pioneering and holding the torch, for these medicines. So yeah, thank you for the work you're doing, Marina, and thank you also for taking the time to do this.
Thank you for having me.